What's up, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Gift of Gaming podcast. On this week's episode, we're diving into part two of our Super Smash Brothers series. That's right, we're taking a look at the entire roster of Super Smash Brothers and breaking it all down. So sit back, relax, and take it all in. All right, it's me, your host, Darren Wade, and today I'm joined by Craig, the Critical Nolan. No one better to sit down and discuss the Super Smash Brothers roster with. Craig, how the hell are you?
I'm good, Darren. How the hell are you?
I'm good. As you can tell, I have my energy drink with me here.
Nice.
And I never drink energy.
You're going to be a bit more high octane than usual.
Well, I'm trying to get myself up to that level. I am so tired today.
And I had a cup of tea about 20 minutes ago, so I should be okay.
You're nice and awake.
I should be able to match your energy if I can.
But I need to get now, of course, no spoilers, because we're going to see it in Barcelona.
Spoilers. You know,
in a couple of weeks or a couple of months' time. How was the Final Fantasy VII Rebirth Orchestra?
It was very, very good. It wasn't A+, but it was certainly an A. You know, like the theater was amazing.
Yeah.
The song choices were for the most part amazing.
You were in Royal Albert Hall in London, was it?
Yes.
Yeah. Great venue.
Yeah. Great venue. Visually a great venue. I've heard a lot of people say the acoustics aren't the best in there, but I mean, I couldn't really tell, you know.
Yeah.
If you're listening to the video game music, I don't go to a lot of concerts of live bands even, or go to a lot of gigs and stuff like that. And usually when I do, I'm absolutely wasted. Like, I'm drunk as fuck. So I don't know what it's supposed to feel like being
sober.
Yeah, sober and just listening. I'm like, is it supposed to be as good as the music in the game? Because if so, then it isn't, you know? But I'm like, is it supposed to be kind of a mixture between? Because they take a little bit of liberties with certain things, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And like anytime they do, I'm singing in my head and going, no, that's not right.
Mm-hmm, okay.
And I get annoyed instantly at that. Like, I can't go, oh, that's a nice little switch they did.
Yeah.
I just get angry instantly. That's how I am.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, whenever that happens, and that happens a lot, I'm always like, oh, no. You know?
That's not what the song goes. I've listened to this extensively. Yeah.
But there's a lot of like build up, and then the highs are, they don't last very long before it starts to kind of. It's like they have to always increase the tempo. They give you the high and it goes all the way back to the bottom and it slowly builds up again. But certain songs only have the highs once. So I'm like, you could have a song that's 4 minutes long and we only hit the peak on one occasion.
For 20 seconds or so. And then it says, what's interesting is because they changed the music in Rebirth compared to Remake, I think Rebirth, the songs were driven around the situation, I think a lot of the times in terms of for you as a player to really soak up the atmosphere in those moments. I think it's different to Remake. I think Remake just had these orchestral versions of the song. So when I went to see the Remake Orchestra, I got everything I expected in that regard. So they weren't...
There's a few song choices that I'm like, why would they pick that song? Isn't important in any way.
I'm
guessing it's because in Remake, they already did those songs.
And
so they don't reuse most of the songs from Remake, I assume. They
Remake
only use Rebirth ones.
Remake had the classics, do you know what I mean? And one of the things I was devastated, as you know, I'm a big fan of the song Valkyrie from Remake. It's one of my favorite new tunes in the Final Fantasy catalog. That wasn't played at Remake. Now, no spoilers.
That wasn't?
No, it wasn't. I don't think it'll be played at Rebirth because it only makes a very vague appearance in Rebirth. But I'm very excited to see it in Barcelona. Are you, now that you've seen it, are you kind of like, oh, I'm sorry, I agreed to go with the lads to Barcelona to see this?
So I was like filming the whole thing, you know, on my phone, which I shouldn't have been doing, but I was looking around, like security were very lax, so I was like, I'm going to get away with this.
Yeah.
But because I was enjoying it so much, I kept not knowing, but I kept tapping my phone with my chin. I was just like bopping away to the song. So anytime a song is good, like... I mean, one that you'll know, the Genova theme was played. But my sound quality is terrible because I am going fucking apeshit crazy. Whereas when a song I don't like is playing, it's perfect. I'm like, oh no.
That's not the one I wanted to capture.
I ruined the good ones with my own excitement.
I wonder, because I've seen a couple of videos go up on YouTube and I have stayed completely clear. I don't want to know anything about
I saw myself in some of those videos.
Did you? Amazing.
I was like, oh, that's the one I was at.
I haven't watched it, and I'm not going to go near it because I don't want to know what the set list is. I don't want to know what songs they're playing. I want to go for a surprise. But I am interested to see because Barcelona is because it's the only one that we could get tickets for. It's the last location. So it will be like one of their, and I think ours is the last day that it's on. So we'll be at probably the closing of the thing. So I'm interested to see, will they do something different as it's the end show? Sure, feck it, will play X, Y, and Z that the fans love as opposed
to. I'm hoping so. Because they had as a special guest the guy who does a lot of the music. Obviously not Nobuo Uematsu, but they had some other guy.
Okay.
And a couple of the songs he had done, like, were all in this.
Right.
And I was like, for me, it's like, if he wasn't here, those songs wouldn't have been added, and I'd have been a lot happier.
Okay.
Because so he's getting way too much screen time.
Yeah.
Because he is the current guy.
Yes.
But he's not Nobuo Uematsu. Yeah, so yeah, all yeah, Nobuo Uematsu stuff isn't getting the time of day it should, whereas his stuff is, and his stuff is nowhere near as good.
Do they...
Like, do you remember what the Sephiroth Reborn theme sounds like?
The which, sorry?
Sephiroth Reborn. Do you remember what his theme sounds like?
Sephiroth Reborn. I don't think so,
This is the fight where you're fighting... You know the weird-looking Sephiroth that you're fighting across dimensions
and
time?
Oh, yes. No, actually, I don't.
No, and why would
you?
Wow,
yeah.
You get 10 minutes of that, you know? And
wow.
I was like, why are they playing this? Nobody knows what this is, you know? Yeah. And then when they brought your man out, they said specifically that he wrote that
piece.
Song. And I went, that makes sense.
Yeah,
that is so political.
And I wonder, will he be with them for the duration of the tour? I wonder, will that be a case of...
Because they introduced him at the very beginning
and then at
the very end.
One thing I was surprised at, for anybody who... I'll leave it at this and we can get into Smash Bros. We'll get into the actual, you know, the bread and butter of what we're here for. But one thing that I was really surprised at, do you remember the ending music for Final Fantasy VII Remake? And it's the you know, it's the guy singing, and he's like,
"You're hollow."
Yeah. So that one, and this—that's
a great song,
unbelievable song. But that's how they—that was the third last song that they played when I went to see it in Remake.
Did someone sing it?
Yeah, and he was he was the most suave dude ever. He came out in this like absolutely amazing tailored suit, couple of buttons on the shirt undone, like tanned, super slick haircut, and he came out, and I was like, "Who the fuck is this
guy?" Okay, because that's a massive disappointment I had with Rebirth that they didn't do that.
That particular song?
No, the other one.
Oh, they did do that song? The new one for Rebirth? Yeah, which isn't a good
song. I assume it's much harder to sing, and therefore they were like, does any of you singers know how to do that? And they all were like, no, that's too hard.
Okay.
But they should have just hired someone.
Oh, so they don't play the
Oh, they
theme.
Play it, but with no lyrics.
No lyrics. Interesting.
It's weird.
It's not
you know?
As good. Interesting. Because I was surprised. I went with my brother, and that was one of the, like, I mean, they played all the absolute fucking tunes. You know what I mean? We thought they were ending on the Ares, Aerith's theme. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, when that finished and everyone gave the round of applause and they were like, oh, thanks very much. Everyone was standing up doing the standing ovation, thinking that's it. The whole place went red and dark. And then you just hear the boom, boom,
nice.
Boom. And everyone was like, fucking lost it. But before that was your man coming out to sing this Hollow song, whatever. It was fucking, that was almost the highlight for me.
Yeah,
and I didn't, I mean, I liked the song, but I wouldn't have been, I was there for the
I quite
the
like the song.
Yeah.
It's grown on me more and more, especially because if you link it with No Promises, they are very much a ballad directed at each other.
Yes,
one from Cloud's perspective and one from
Aerith's
perspective.
Which I like.
Perspective. I'm like, wow, that now that you have both songs, they make a lot more sense.
And I'm interested to see what the third theme will be for whatever they call Final Fantasy 7-3. But Craig, that's not what we're here for. We've done 10 minutes of Final Fantasy 7.
Well, thanks for mentioning it, because I was dying. Nobody has asked how the concert was. Not one person.
Well, see, I wanted to ask kind of over message, but I didn't want anything kind of spoiled for me, because I'm still yet to see it. But I was keen to know your kind of your basic.
I'm not going
to
say what songs were
Yeah, because I want to be surprised, whatever. Yeah. But I hope, for your sake, considering you were disappointed, I hope when we go
I
see
wasn't
it,
disappointed. I just...
There was
I don't know where my frame of reference is, because when I went to that Candlelight concert thing that we did with Zelda, I was massively disappointed then. But it's only one person doing the music, you know, and he was definitely taking liberties because he was trying to push his own career. And I was like, I don't like that. You know, it's good not because you made it good, but because it was good before.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Fuck
if
off.
If it broke, don't fix it, my friend. Yeah, yeah.
But with this, there's like 200 people, and I still think there's parts missing almost in the orchestra, you know. But the quality was amazing. And just looking around, and in the UK, so many people dressed up.
Yeah, man, it was
and
so
I
good.
And I was like, oh my God, there's a fucking Aerith behind me who looks the real deal.
There was
you know?
An Aerith, but that was the lovely thing. There was, when I went, me and my brother, there was the, and this is the last thing we'll talk about in the episode, but when I went, whatever it was, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, me and my brother had seats separately. So we're sitting across from each other, either side of Albert, or the Royal Albert Hall, whatever. But I could see him, and he was sitting beside two girls who had cosplayed as Aerith and Tifa. Mm-hmm. And there was a guy beside me, and he had like, it was nice. He had like a little like a chocobo belt. Like, he wasn't going cosplay, but he was like a little bit. But because I was on my own and I wasn't chatting anyone, I was happy to have the chats with the strangers, and everybody was just fucking so fucking happy to be there. You know what I mean?
It was
really great vibes.
The buzz was fantastic. Yeah. Just being at the bar and everyone was having their chats. I was like, I could easily just meld into any conversation here and have a great time.
Yeah.
But I had Geraldine with me, so he wasn't able to do that. You know?
Well, we'll get into it, right? This episode today is the Smash Brothers Part 2 of our Super Smash Brothers series, which we're going to talk about characters. This will most likely be a two-parter. We'll see how our timing goes. But, you know, we've got a lot of character ground to cover, and I don't want to rush any of it because I think we've spent so much time over the years talking about the Smash Brothers characters that I don't think it's... I think we owe it to ourselves to kind of take our time with this and break it down and finally get it off our chest just how much we fucking love Smash Brothers and the characters.
It's just the greatest thing ever, yeah.
Absolutely. So I figured the best way to start this off was to kind of go through each game and the character roster. Now, I want to kind of talk about the characters and how they are now in Ultimate, but I'll go through each game as to kind of as an introductory thing to the characters, because going through just the Ultimate roster straight off the bat with 80-odd fucking characters is just a bit of a nightmare. But I kind of want to break down the characters that you like, maybe don't like, movesets, kind of skins, their importance for you
skins
in Smash Brothers.
As well, like, yeah, wow, yeah. Shit.
We're going to break it all down, and I'm only saying that because of fucking Sora, when we get to Sora and all of his amazing skins. But I have the list here, right, and as you kind of highlighted in our first part of the Super Smash Brothers series that we're doing, the first game came out with 12 characters, Super Smash Brothers 64. So we've got Mario, Luigi, Donkey Kong, Link, Samus, Yoshi, Kirby, Fox, Jigglypuff, Ness, Captain Falcon, Pikachu. Is there anyone you want to kind of kick off the topic with out of those, out of the original 12? The 12 characters that kind of kicked off the Smash Brothers series is a good mesh of Nintendo, Pokemon. Nintendo Pokemon is kind of the big kind of collab here, I think.
Yeah.
But you have the strange ones like, you know, Fox, Captain Falcon, Ness, the kind of unusual types to throw in there. Is there anybody that you want to kind of kick it off with out of those characters that kind of means something to you?
Well,
you know?
Fox is my original character. I love the reflector of Star Fox 64. I mean, it was Lilac Wars. I love that game.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that was the reason. I was a big fan of Pokemon too. But I leaned towards Fox just because there were so many weapons and the reflector just felt like a great idea to be able to reflect that shit back. So he was my definite favorite character. But I thought all 12, well, 10 of the 12 characters brought a lot, and then two were clear dittos.
Can I hazard a guess as the two dittos would be?
Well, I mean,
Ness and Jigglypuff?
No, it's Luigi and Jigglypuff.
Hey, how...
Okay, Luigi has gotten his own moveset over time, but in the original Smash Bros., he does not have
that.
He was
just an echo
he's
of
a ditto.
Mario. Yeah,
so
yeah.
He's the exact what I just said. How could you not think Luigi was a ditto in the original Smash Bros.?
Because I just fucking love Luigi.
Hey, how dare you?
I'm just happy to have him there. Anytime Luigi's included in anything, I'm just delighted, you know?
Other than his fireball being green, there was no difference whatsoever. Like, you know? Maybe his jump animation was like, I can't remember, it's been like 20 years since I played it, but his entire moveset was Mario's, and Jigglypuff's was pretty much Kirby's, except he could use that rest move, which has no visible, like, there's nothing to it. He just kind of sleeps for a second. You know, there's no animation to it. I'm sure Sakurai was able to program that in no time whatsoever, you know?
Yeah.
Like, all his moves are very basic or just Kirby's moves, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas Ness and Captain Falcon are very unique,
yeah,
despite the fact that they're not in the original 8, you know, so that was kind of surprising a little bit, because you could really have the 10 original fighters and then two dittos, but they chose to go 8 and 4, you know,
yeah.
So that was kind of surprising. But of those characters, Fox is my go-to, and Link was the alternative because up and B was just so powerful.
Yeah, I think for me, when Melee came out at the time, Yoshi was my character of choice. Now, I don't touch Yoshi these days at all. I find Yoshi quite unwieldy. But at the time, I picked Yoshi because of Yoshi's jump recovery. I was quite young at the game, and I needed whatever fucking help I could get back to the level. Do you know what I mean? I was the worst of my brothers.
Yoshi's up and B is very bad, you know?
Yeah, but the normal jump was huge in that game. Compared to anybody else, I think... Yeah. I mean, Jigglypuff had the floaty thing, but everyone hated Jigglypuff.
For the first 3 Smash Brothers games, I hated Yoshi just because I always thought his up and B was useless. I didn't know you could use it over and over and over again.
To get yourself
so
closer.
So you can always, you know,
help
get
yourself
a little. And you can jump, use up and B, then use your second jump, and then up and B again, which is something I've never once done in the game, but you can do it.
Great recovery. So looking at these characters kind of as they are now, so again, I know we're kind of breaking them down by the games which they're released, but I want to talk about them as they are currently.
Okay.
Like as in their current status in Ultimate, you know, not their shitty movesets, the fact that Luigi's now... I mean, I'll talk from my perspective.
But no, Luigi is like now his own character.
Yes, very much so.
Like, you know?
And that's what I love about him now in terms of the Luigi's Mansion thing. It's a cool thing that I love about the characters throughout Smash Brothers, that they've developed in a way. They've grown within Smash Brothers as they have with their own IPs as well, for a lot of the cases. Like, I mean, when we talk about Mario's skins, you can play Mario in Ultimate now when he's got Mario Maker as a skin. He's got the kind of, I'm assuming that American one or one of the flashy white ones is from Odyssey as well. Like the his white top hat and stuff like that is his Odyssey.
The character. Wedding one is from Odyssey,
You know, so and that's what I love as well, is that as the games have gone on, they've introduced these little bits that are nods to what's going on in the outside world of these characters as well. So Luigi, again, he was crap for the longest time. They kind of nerfed him in a way for Ultimate, but I, you know... For me,
the thing is, that open B seems devastatingly good.
But that open B's always been like that. His throw, which was the exact copy of Mario's, which I still think is one of the best throws in the game. Do you know what I mean? Because people can't approach you. Like if you're spinning the character around, you're going to get hurt if you approach that as well.
Yeah. That tornado attack, man.
Oh. Yeah. So he's quite unique now. And I spent a lot of time when Ultimate came out. I was like, I've never really been good at Luigi, but I'd love to get to be good at him. He's the only character in Smash Brothers that I've spent some time actually watching YouTubers, you know, putting up, you know, lessons on how to play as Luigi and taking some of that, you know, and actually try to put that into practice, because I'm not that competitive when it comes to Smash Brothers. I love playing it. I love playing with you guys, but I've never been like, oh, am I going to get on the competitive scene and do a zero to KO kind of move.
I've never once done a combo like that. I don't have the patience to learn that. Yeah, I think that would require just a few hours of sitting down with the character and doing something over and over again. Like the attack cancel and reverse aerial rush, or RAR as they call it. I never do those in a fight. I've practiced them a couple of times for a few minutes and went, okay, I was able to do it twice in a row there. But then if I'm in a fight with you or Calm, I forget it immediately and just go on autopilot.
Because the stakes are so much higher. Yeah. But I love how the characters have grown. Looking at those kind of characters as well, we've got like Pikachu, which was such a, you know, the importance of the characters, because Pikachu being in this was such a door opening for Pokemon.
Pikachu was the big one because Pokemon was so huge at the time. Yeah. Like, you know?
And it's opened the door for so many, as we go through, for so many other Pokemon characters to be introduced. For the Pokeballs as a weapon to be introduced, as an item to be introduced.
The best item in the game.
Because you could just get all, like, I don't know how many hundreds of Pokemon they've animated into the game to use in the Pokeballs. But looking at these other characters, Link, for me, if we're going to go with the originals, Link was one of the, I think, OG, more powerful, like versatile characters in the game.
Just that up and B move, especially on four player, could really, like, if you're in a tight area and you use that up and B attack, you could hit people like left and right of you. Yeah. You know, like just having that was excellent. Like, you know, that and like maybe Ganon or Captain Falcon's down and B because the Falcon Kick went so far. Because I don't know, back when we were kids and we're playing it, like it was a lot harder to fight. So I was using special moves
all
non-stop.
The time. Yeah.
Like I probably didn't even really know how to do smash attacks. I was just trying to kill with the special moves.
Yeah.
So Mario, I never played because all of his specials are really, really weak. Like, because he's a combo specialist. So I never would have used Mario in the original game because the combo made no sense to me whatsoever. I'm just like, no, a Falcon Punch can do 20% damage in one hit. Yeah, like, you know, but Link has so many attacks like that. Like his forward smash has more range. He's got the boomerang. He's got the bow. That up and B special, not only is a good recovery, but it does damage, you know. He has a sword. He was the first and only sword user in the original Smash. So his attacks trump everything.
You know, and the sword users became incredibly prevalent throughout the series.
Now one in every like two or three characters has a sword.
Yeah, but exactly. Like looking at another character as well there that I'm quite interested by, never really played by, but Kirby, in terms of I quite enjoyed, was it one of the Kirby games on Game Boy that I played quite a lot of, but it was cool to see Kirby animated in that way, and I was fascinated by the ability to like look like whatever character you inhale and have their moves. And that was always a thing that we'll talk about it for the DLC characters that came into it, but when they were announcing new characters and they had a big trailer for them and they showed the moveset, one piece that was always kind of like became tradition was, what does the Kirby thing look like?
And throughout the trailers, you always saw what the Kirby was going to look like in all the reveals and stuff.
And I love that Kirby, who, you know, it was kind of an interesting addition to the very first Smash Brothers 64, ends up being the protagonist of what is the most successful, you know, the best Smash Brothers game in Ultimate. You end up playing
well, that's no surprise.
Kirby, you know?
Sakurai made the Kirby games. He's trying to put his own foot forward there.
I'm just thinking, is there anybody else in there that I kind of want to give a special note to? Captain Falcon, we should talk about in terms of interesting characters. We mentioned it kind of on the last part, the first episode of the Smash Brothers series, kind of how interesting it is that he is a character only because of Smash Brothers. He's got a personality only because of Smash Brothers, because he doesn't have a personality before that. But what I like about certain characters in Smash Brothers is that we've developed certain modes around certain characters. Do you know what I mean? That we just play because this character does something. Do you know what I mean?
Of course.
And the Captain Falcon, we have our unspecialized knee round because he has a critical knee attack. It's like a, what would you call it? An air.
It's his forward air attack.
Forward air attack.
And like it does a lightning explosive knee that's just ridiculously satisfying if you hit it. So we do that on Terry's King of Fury stage.
Yeah.
So that like when you hit them with the knee, you bang into that kind of force field and it slows down that extra second so you can see the impact before they die.
It's so
we
satisfying.
Just play Captain Falcon on that level all the time.
Yeah.
And it's like knee deaths or you're lame, like, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And again, I love that because I wouldn't play as Captain Falcon, generally speaking. So I like that we have certain modes to...
Captain Falcon is a fantastic character.
Yeah, he's brilliant.
The fastest in the game up until Sonic was introduced. So for the longest time, he was like the reigning speed king of the game, like, you know.
Yeah, and I'm looking at in terms of... When I look at those original 12, ones I didn't touch upon because I think they're quite technical, and I still would... Maybe it's silly me, but Pikachu.
You still would. You fuck Pikachu.
No. So Pikachu, I find, is our mate Kev, who is probably listening to the podcast. Hi, Kev. He's over in New Zealand still at the minute. Come home soon because we want to play some Smash Bros. Witcher. But Pikachu. Kev plays a really good Pikachu these days. And it's one of those things that I always regret that he's been around since the original game and I've never gelled with him as a character. He's
quite good.
He's very good. Yeah. But I think there's a certain technical... Because he's, I think... How I view Kevin playing as him these days, I see him as quite a combo kind of character.
Oh, he's
now.
Massively. In fact, Pikachu is like top five in the meta, like in like, you know, the tournaments and stuff. Yeah. Like he's been winning tournaments left, right, and center for years.
And
like,
I've just never learned that level of Pikachu. And because I haven't done that,
I'm incapable of playing that good. But a lot of his attacks are very satisfying with the thunder, his down and A. His aerial back A in the air spins him around a lot. Like it looks fantastic, like, you know.
Yeah.
And his combos kind of suck you in. So he's got a lot of potential as well. And like one of his attacks I only learned a few months ago, but I've played Pikachu a lot more since, is that you can throw people up in the, you can grab someone, throw them up in the air, and then immediately thunder them.
Yeah.
And the thunder brings them all the way back to you and it explodes. It is so satisfying.
Kev figured that one out and it's been the bane of my playthrough sometimes. And I'm like, oh fuck, it's a new combo that I need to figure out how to get out of. Out of those 12 though, Craig, who do you think is best represented by their moveset, like in terms of from their own video game? I think they're all incredibly well represented.
They're all great.
But is there a character that...
Link probably is the most accurate because all of his items he uses and the hookshot makes perfect sense with him.
Yeah.
Like Pikachu uses an attack called Thunder Jolt. What the fuck is that? Like that doesn't exist in any Pokemon game.
Yeah.
And like if they called it Thunder Shock, it'd be no problem. But they didn't. They called it Thunder Jolt. So I'm like, well, that doesn't exist. He also has Skull Bash. And I'm like, what? Pikachu doesn't learn that.
Yeah.
You know, so Pikachu is ridiculous for his moveset. Thunder makes sense, but after that, like, it's pretty ridiculous. Mario with his cape, I'm like, don't like that. Like, that's just...
And it's funny you should mention the cape because I know that people don't like the cape, but I love the fact that the cape is introduced because I was a massive Super Mario World fan and the cape was the big thing. And I love as much as it's a stupid...
But the cape is never a default item that he has.
No. You know?
Same with the Fire Flower. So it's just like, how does he have all these power-ups
straight
at once?
Away.
Because Mario can never I do that, you know?
But I also love, and as much as I hate, it's why I never play as Mario, because I think his water soaker from Mario Sunshine is such a useless fucking move. I've never figured out how to
well
play
it's only an edge guard, like that's all it's for. But if Mario's moveset just used the flood, that would make a lot more sense, you know. But of course that game wasn't even out in the original Smash Bros. So that's impossible. But now his moveset is just a kind of a bit of everything from different games,
and I love that though. I mean I know it's probably
it's
taken
great,
away,
but it doesn't... Like, if they're to make a new brand new Smash Brothers game tomorrow, I think his moveset would drastically be different, you know?
Yes, yeah.
Same with Pikachu's, maybe like Fox or Reflector, they just made that up out of thin air, like, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Where when you could spin the R-Wing in Lilac Wars, it would reflect, so your ship could reflect things if it did the barrel roll.
Yes.
So I think that's where they got
that
from.
But I like
from.
That, do you know what I mean? It's a little nod, and I love little...
But again,
like
Star Fox
motifs.
Adventures didn't exist back then, so Fox had never had his on-foot adventure.
Yeah.
Whereas now, if they have a moveset, maybe he'd have that staff and be more... bit more
which
like
would be
Link.
Really like, that's what I mean. And I think one of the parts that we'll talk about in our final episode of the Smash Brothers series that we're doing is what we'd look at or what we'd want to see if they were to revamp Super Smash Brothers, bring out a new one. And there's loads of those character bits that I'd love to talk about as well. Yeah. We'll leave that for our final parter.
But then you have like characters like, you know, Donkey Kong and Kirby, and they're good, but they don't usually have in those games, they don't have a big move set.
Yes.
Like,
so they had to kind of pull it out of
thin air. In none of Donkey Kong's games does he actually have a wind-up punch. Yeah. But it makes perfect sense that he would have that. It's a brilliant attack, yeah. And I love it. But I think Link is represented extremely well.
Yes.
You know, like all his kit, all his attacks. They
and
just
how they developed him, you know, because now in Ultimate you get like the remote detonating bomb, they've all that kind of stuff.
Even great. Though they've made him worse in some ways because they've removed his tether grab, which is kind of like his hook shot. But in Breath of the Wild, he doesn't have a hook shot. So they had to remove that, which makes him worse. Yeah. But they were like, oh, well, no, we have to make it legit. So,
but you still get, I like that when we get onto the characters, you still get touches of that in the likes of Young Link still has the hook shot.
Exactly. There's other parts. So there are ways to keep it.
But I'm going to use that as a segue to get onto our next group of characters, because we have so many characters to cover, Craig. We've covered 12 of 80 something, do you know what I mean? Kind of loosely. But we're moving to Smash Brothers Melee, where we got, 3, 6, 9, 12.
Melee is most
13,
people's
14.
Favorite game, but in terms of characters, this is the one that weaseled out the most. Like,
In what way do you mean?
This has an absolute abundance of Ditto characters, you know, like copycats that, you know, aren't real. So realistically, Smash Bros. Melee only has an extra like 5 or 6 characters.
Interesting. You know? Okay, so I'll go to the list of the new characters that we got, and we can kind of talk through the ones that we want to talk about. But we got Super Smash Bros. Melee introduced Bowser, Princess Peach, Ice Climbers, Zelda, Sheik, Mewtwo, Marth, Mr. Game & Watch, Dr. Mario, Ganondorf, Falco, Young Link, Pichu, and Roy. Those were our new additions to Melee.
And the last like 8 or 9 you mentioned, they're all Dittos. Yeah.
Roy's a Ditto of Marth.
So Marth is in, and
And Roy
is pretty much an
unlockable.
Exact duplicate. Yeah. But they have the whole thing where the tipper does more damage in the bait, but their moveset is completely identical.
Yes. At least in Melee it is, isn't it?
And Melee it is, yeah. So Marth gets that kind of stab move instead in later games, but in the original his move is
just charge
like Roy's.
Is there any particular character in that? I mean, I might actually kick it off and say one of the characters that I was so delighted that were introduced, and I still haven't played their game, and I think I should. Based off the amount of time I spent playing as them, Ice Climbers. What an addition to Smash Brothers. I think you guys loved it. I love the Ice Climbers because the interesting about them is they're the only character of their kind in Smash that I play as one character, but there is a second Ice Climber with me who does all the moves with me, who has their own kind of hidden percentage bar, essentially, that you guys can just wail on him for a little while, and after a while he'll get blasted out of the thing and I'll be left on my own, and I become substantially weaker without
because your attack's running hitting once instead of twice.
And so it's all half damage essentially, and what I love about that is this, and it never really works to my advantage, but I always think it might, is that when I play as Ice Climbers, I always hope that you guys get distracted by trying to attack. Now I don't know their names, I think you know their names, but I call them Dale and Sebastian, just out of
one is Nana and the other one I don't know.
So we'll call them Dale and Sebastian just for this episode. It's not accurate. But I love that sometimes you guys can get distracted by attacking Sebastian, so I can run in as Dale. But there's so much more at stake because
Do you think that that's how it happens?
No, that's how it
happens.
Because
when I'm fighting you, I'll hit you, but the second the other one gets separated, I hone in on him and just fucking wail.
And that's it's interesting because Ice Climbers, I never play a calm game with Ice Climbers because the moment anyone kills Sebastian or knocks him out, I just kind of see red and I just go for revenge. So I never play a smart game. But I love Ice Climbers as a character. I love their moveset. It's quite interesting. Their down and B is a great kind of freezing kind of combo. Their smash attacks are very, very strong.
That's because they hit twice.
Yeah. Their range is dreadful, but their strength is massive. And it is, I don't think I'm great on a one-on-one when I play as the Ice Climbers, but when we're doing a 4 or 5-man smash, I love playing as them. I think they're really versatile and just a great introduction to, and again, one I know nothing about. Never played their games, don't know anything. But I love that they're in this. And it's again, it's a kind of a Captain Falcon kind of situation where I'm like, I love these guys. I have no idea what
that was
from.
A case of, like, in most cases with Smash, particularly because the fans want this, like, I always feel like the character that's going to get picked is going to be very, very popular, but might not necessarily have a unique moveset. Mm-hmm. But Ice Climbers was the exact opposite of that because nobody knew who the Ice Climbers were, but Sakurai brought them in anyway, clearly because he had an idea of
really
the moveset in mind. He was like, oh, two characters instead of one, like,
them.
I can do a lot with this.
And I'm sure much like the game, you need the two of them to go through levels, like, you know, they're a team. And much like when you're playing as them in the game, especially for their recovery, because they're up in B, is that one throws a rope to the other and helps them up. Their recovery, if you've lost one, is dreadful. Like, there's no up in B recovery. If I've lost Sebastian, there's no way I'm getting back on the level if I've been knocked off. So I love that aspect, that while I'm playing, I'm also doing my best to keep my partner alive, which is a great addition. Like, I don't, there's no other character like that in Smash Brothers as far as, you know, my playing is concerned. So yeah, I think straight off the bat, I just had to bring up Ice Climbers. So from that list, anyone in particular that you were a big fan of that you saw kind of come into Melee and how they play now?
So when I went from 64 to Melee, I stayed with Fox. He was my go-to, and my secondary was probably Link, same way as with the old games. As much as like Melee sped things up, it made all the characters better.
A lot faster.
It introduced fuck all new characters, like, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, Mewtwo was pretty decent, and I thought Zelda was rubbish. Sheik was pretty cool, but because you had to transform as the one character, it meant her down B was non-existent, you know, because all it does is transform. So she felt weaker because of that, because she's wasting part of her moveset just on the transform. But Sheik was a really, really good character, like really, really fast, just like Captain Falcon. So she became the new default instead of Zelda. Zelda for me was the throwaway version.
You'd pick Zelda, immediately transform to Sheik, and then forget about
but
Zelda.
But there was a means, like you could press a certain button combination and to make sure you'd start as Sheik, and I would never, ever switch to Zelda.
Yeah.
Now, Andy has in recent years shown me that Zelda is actually a bit of a powerhouse with all the bullshit she has with her moveset. Like, but yeah. Sheik was very combo heavy, very speedy, and like even that bouncing fish move, I was like, oh, that's class looking.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, there's a massive, like, you know, the modern Zelda is a huge, like, you know, frustrating. Anytime Andy's coming back to play some Smash Brothers, I always get a little bit apprehensive because I'm like, I gotta fucking deal with all this bullshit from a Zelda character, but a great versatile character.
And then the introduction to Martin Roy, although I think I favored Roy over Mart, but now it's clearly Mart over Roy in the long term, because Mart is the original, and Mart is the first character in Smash to ever have a counter.
Yeah,
it would not be the last.
No.
I think about 10 to 15 characters have a counter now,
not more.
But after Melee, there was only one count, well, two if you include Roy, but that was the only characters that had counter, and now that's become an absolute staple with anyone that has a sword, like, you know. But that was a very unique move at that time, that was like, wow, you can counter a physical attack, that's pretty amazing. Like,
and I loved I know you don't like them, but I just love them for the hilarity. Again, I think they're a stupid character. I play as them sometimes just for funsies, but Mr. Game and Watch, for their style, and again, they're kind of a fun moveset. I think they've grown on me over time,
but when I was younger and I was playing Melee, I would never pick Game & Watch, and if anyone did, I'd go after them immediately just to like annoy them, because I'd be like, how dare you pick Game & Watch, I'm going for you. It just looked so shit, but it's very well animated.
Yes,
I must say, looking back over it, and particularly in the new game, the way it bops and beeps and stuff, it's put together.
Because I had the Mr. Game & Watch thing, you know what I mean, it was like a couple of games, it was real boring, like you had capture, like one of the things was you had I love that. Like, you were holding a blanket as fireman, and you had to capture things coming out of a burning building as part of one of the mini games in this Mr. Game and Watch handheld thing you could have. And I love that that has been put into the game. So, like, when you do an up and B, it's like the firemen are throwing you from a blanket. Like, all these extra little characters. The animations of Mr. Game and Watch are fabulous in the game. I think they're some of the best looking things.
It's just my first ever introduction to Mr. Game and Watch was a new challenger approaching. And I went, oh, what's that silhouette? Oh, it's a silhouette.
Yes.
like that was so disappointing. To just see that, like, he looked exactly the same after the silhouette. And I was like, what the hell is that thing supposed to be?
Yeah.
And it just felt to me like another lazy character, you know, that they'd thrown in, even though he had a unique moveset.
He did. And I mean, like I said, even now I play as him for fun. A unique moveset, but I still don't think they're a great character. I don't think they're very versatile or strong. I've rarely had a good game with Mr. Game & Watch. It's more for just the hilarity of having them in there.
Yeah.
One character, and I know we're talking about Echoes, but one character that I love was introduced was Falco, purely for the competitive scene that we kind of very
briefly
just just like went to a tourney and kind of watched a few videos, and Fox and Falco were kind of like a big fan favorites when it came to the competitive scene. And I just love that when we ever had, because they're both so fast.
Yeah.
We were watching those tournaments, I was like, Jesus Christ, this is a different level of... Yeah. Those kind of characters with their speed really taught me that there was a definite better way, not a better way, but a more professional way to play, more competitive way to play Smash Brothers. Of course, I saw those two up against each other.
But like, anyone who really wanted to win a tournament would pick Fox.
Yeah.
And if it was ever Fox v Fox, someone would often be like, all right, I'll be Falco. But otherwise, it would be Fox all the time.
Yeah, because they were just so quick. And they Melee had a thing for all the characters was the, was it wave dashing?
Where you could pretty much like... Constantly, spin on the spot constantly going be, left and right, yeah, left and constantly right. Captain Falcon was the best for that because it would just looked like he was dancing around the screen.
And we have kind of two characters, two big powerhouses that were introduced in this game
Bowser
as well.
Bowser and Ganondorf, two villains.
That we use
Krauser was excellent, but Ganondorf was disappointing because they just copied Captain Falcon and then made him slower, but more powerful. They just changed his data.
Because he didn't have a sword in Melee, sure he didn't?
He didn't have a sword up until Ultimate. That was
the first time he had a sword.
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
Even in the... Because he used to be allowed in fisticuffs in the boxing ring in the Wii U version.
Yeah.
And Niall, I think, and Thomas have tried bringing him in there a couple of times. Get the fuck out of here. He's not allowed in the boxing ring.
So for those who don't know, we have another game mode where we play in Little Mac's boxing ring level, but the rules are that your character can't have as a base attack...
Can't have a weapon.
Yeah. It's fisticuffs only.
A projectile like a fireball at Mario is fine, provided it's a one-off and...
You're just using it a little bit, but you're in there for... but that was great. Ganondorf, like, I mean, and I'm talking about these characters and their usage now, Ganondorf is a great fucking powerhouse of a character.
With every game, they've changed his moveset a little and added a few tweaks here or there.
And I think he's gotten better with every iteration. There's no version of Smash Bros. That I look back on and say Ganondorf was better then.
There's a fan-made remapping of Ganondorf's movesets, which only changes like two of the moves, but it changes the two ones that should have been changed. Instead of his B Warlock Punch, he can press B and immediately hover in the air like he does in his N64 game.
Yes.
In the way he kind of hovers around. Yeah. And so he gets extra mobility and range, and he can use that to combo into attacks.
Yeah,
and
I'm
like, wow, that burst of speed makes him from like the bottom of the bottom tier to being really
right
good instantly. Like, and then his up tilt is no longer an axe kick that takes 20 seconds to complete. Like, that is the worst attack, and probably in the whole game, you'll never ever hit someone with that. Like, it's literally like,
and it takes so long.
I think it's about 5-6 full seconds of his like foot in the air, and if it hits you die instantly. But you're never gonna get hit
because it's such an obvious, like, it's telegraphed. Do you know what I mean? That move is so telegraphed.
Like, even on a player, you've so much time to get out of the
to
way
to avoid
like,
it,
you know?
Looking at that, I'm gonna put a mention, of course, to Young Link, as when I look at Super Smash Bros. 64 and as the games are developing, kind of, you know, Yoshi, Luigi were my characters in 64, then Melee, I definitely had Young Link as my absolute kind of favorite character. And particularly
just
because
Link, you know, just small Link.
Small Link, but I love, because I mean, Ocarina of Time was my favorite Zelda game, and you spend the majority of that game as Young Link.
No, you don't. Young Link has three temples, and Adult Link has five.
Oh.
Plus
I guess
the
I
final
just,
boss. So
I guess
six, like.
Six,
you know?
Yeah.
So it's a rate of 66 to 33,
okay,
I'd say.
Yeah,
in terms
never
of
mind.
Time.
But I think I enjoyed the Young Link kind of. Because that's it. I think I love playing as Young Link because when you change the time, the whole world is shit when you're Link. Do you know what I mean? But it's all happy and the sun is up when you're
Young
Link.
It playing as Adult Link because the world is destroyed, essentially.
So I think when I, you know, when you got to play as Young Link and he had his little shield and his taunts was him popping open the bottle of milk and drinking that, I was like, this kid's fucking great, you know?
Yeah. I was surprised they added those animations, because with the other characters they just copied it as is, like, you know, like Falco and Pichu, they just didn't have their own animations.
Yeah.
Even Dr. Mario just did what Mario did, like,
yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Whereas they
created
the
Young Link
home,
they did, like, they actually, you know, gave him the milk, you know?
Yeah,
unless Adult Link had that too, in which case then I don't
think so. No, I don't think Adult Link ever just popped open a thing of milk, but and I think he was I was at an age where I was like, here's a cool young character that I want to play as, and Young Link would have been my best character for a long, long time. Mewtwo is an interesting character in that we get him in Melee, but then Mewtwo disappears kind of in later games to be brought in as DLC.
And he had the second ever, well, not like a counter, but a reflect. So he was the second character after, I guess Falco had it then as well, but like he had a reflect, which was quite unique. But then his standard B move was just Samus's blaster.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, is there a lot going on here? Like, he also had a move to put you to sleep, but Jigglypuff also has that.
So
I'm like, where's the new moves, you know?
Yeah.
Or is he just a ditto of a few characters, but he's not unique, you know?
And I quite enjoyed his moveset, but Mewtwo is a character I've never visited myself. The odd time I'd pick him up if we did a random battle where I landed on Mewtwo, I'd probably have a little bit of fun with him, but Mewtwo has never been a character that I've engaged with at all in Smash
I
Brothers.
Love the visual of his up smash, the way it looks like he has a galaxy in his hand.
Yeah.
But like Lucas has that exact attack as well, although Lucas's is fucking way too powerful.
I'm just looking at this list as well, and I think I only enjoy the character because Colm plays him a lot, but Dr. Mario has always been...
I hate Dr. Mario. But it's only because Colm only ever picks Dr. Mario on the...
Boxing ring. Yes.
And if you don't know, Dr. Mario is just Mario, but physically way stronger, but has terrible jumps. So competitively, Dr. Mario is one of the worst characters in the game because his double jump is bad and his up and B is bad.
But if you're in the boxing
ring. But if you're in the boxing ring, suddenly he's just Mario, like 2.0, like, you know.
Yeah, and I love, I just like that he's, because I mean the Dr. Mario game and everything like that I had no interest in. I thought Dr. Mario was a bit of a silly introduction into the game back then, but now because Colm always plays as Dr. Mario and always
but
puts
him in.
But
you know what he also does? And it's like, because when I ever pick a character that has a projectile, I try to never use it because I'm like, I want it to be fisticuffs, but Colm uses that pill capsule constantly. And he only uses it because it interrupts you and then he can grab you, but he does it all the time.
I think because I didn't like him at all, but I love how Colm uses him. I love how Colm puts him in like his villain surgeon outfit. He never plays him in the normal Dr. Mario clothes. So I always in my head canon for Dr. Mario, he's a villain for whatever reason. But it's only because
Makes him more unique,
So moving on from there, I think we'll touch upon kind of Brawl and the characters introduced. Then we'll talk about those guys, and I guess from there we might kind of leave our first episode there because we are moving along a little bit of time, but like, you know, let's settle on the Brawl characters 20 minutes here, Craig, and get into it. So introduced into Brawl as extra characters, and what I find is mad when I was actually writing this out, game
we didn't actually touch on Bowser, so
please,
he's one of my favorite characters of Melee, and like, not because I would use him too much, just because he actually had a unique moveset. He's surprisingly fast at running, you know. I couldn't believe he's one of the faster characters to run. But I mean, his Bowser Bomb, his like forward and B, which was a grab, which could get through your shield.
Yeah.
That changed the whole game for me. Like, you know, because up until then, I was like, fucking everyone shields. What am I supposed to do? Like, you know, because I can't run up and grab getting close. What if they press A? Suddenly I'm playing rock, paper, scissors, and I don't like that.
Because of that move, because you and Niall are devils for that move, I have come to despise Bowser as a character for that one move alone.
Well, it's a great strategy. But if I pick Bowser for the first like couple of minutes and I run up towards people, they will always shield out of instinct. So I will get them every single time.
It's so frustrating because I can't get my head around that.
Couple of minutes, they stop shielding whatsoever. So in the next game, people don't shield as often. And then when it's a character like Wolf, who's great at just like hitting you with attacks, I sometimes pick Bowser and then immediately go to Wolf just because I know
people
won't shield as often.
Very good. You're thinking on a 3D level of chess here.
Right? Yeah, you know? I pick characters knowing it'll affect people's mindset for the next character.
Interesting on Bowser. How do you think his move is as a representation of his character?
Pretty good, because his spinny, his up and B is just him spinning around in his shell. I think that's fantastic.
Which would have been a classic Bowser kind of
Because like in Mario 64, that's kind of all he's doing. Like, but he's big, and they use his side to like show him actually punching. I'm like, cool. He's a bit brutal. Like, if he was in like a beat 'em up game, I can imagine him in like a Street Fighter as Bowser
and just
holding his
vicious
own. Like, and I like that side of him more. Like,
he's a brawler.
More of a brawler. Cause he's the big shell, big massive tough guy.
Yeah.
So I'm like, his representation in Smash had never been seen in the Mario games, but I loved it because I was like, this is how Bowser should
it's
like
a good
in every
version.
Mario game, he should walk straight up to Mario and beat the
like,
shit out
go,
of him.
Go, yeah, like,
none of this try standing there breathing fire, you know, is one of his moves. I'm glad it's in there, but you know, he's so much more.
I think based as well on that, and then I'll move on to kind of the Brawl characters, but I think Mr. Game & Watch, if we're talking about representation, having handheld Game & Watch thing and all the little bits that are added, I think Mr. Game & Watch has a fantastic representation of him as a character.
Yes.
It's just a pity it's all shit. In terms of from a competitive perspective, he's a dreadful character to play as. We didn't really touch upon Pichu or Princess Peach in that one, but kind of
like
really
I said,
echoes.
Peach is decent, but with Peach doesn't have her own video game. She does now. Super Peach All Star,
whatever. Out soon, or is it already?
No, that's already out. Yeah,
okay.
Not great.
That's a pity.
But at least going forward, she will probably have a moveset catered towards that.
Yes.
Whereas in Melee, she's just, all right, let's give her a tennis racket, let's give her a golf club. Like, they had no clue what to do.
She's just the...
Let's give her a Toad that counters, but like shit, you know?
But I love that we got Toad in the game because of that. And I like the fact that they introduced the kind of the Mario sports aspect of things.
Yeah.
They had to pull from something, I guess. But I enjoy that she kind of represents...
She represents
the wacky
all
Mario.
The other Mario games. Yeah. That's why I'm like, that's why we don't need Waluigi, because he's just going to be that as well.
Exactly.
And
we
already have
Peach. He's got none of his own.
There's no place for him even in that universe.
I'm gonna also, before we move on, mention Roy. Of course, we talked about him and Mark being the original, but Roy has a special place in my heart because he was my introduction to Fire Emblem. I never knew about Fire Emblem before these characters in Melee, and because of these characters, especially Roy, I just liked his moveset. I liked his armor. I thought he looked cooler than Marth, cool. You know? It got me into Fire Emblem in a big, big way. He was my introduction. And that's what I love about Smash Bros. We talk about like certain characters like Captain Falcon having his own personality. Roy as a character in Smash Bros. Was what got me into Fire Emblem, which is kind of up there as one of my top series of games as
well. It probably did for me as well. I just can't remember which was responsible, you know?
I'd say probably Marth for you, maybe the OG. Maybe. Like, you know? But I mean, not to say that I played Roy's Fire Emblem. I just mean that having
playing
a Fire Emblem character, I was like, what is this Fire Emblem game? And then realizing it's kind of this turn-based strategy thing and relationship building with all your comrades. I was like, this is a fucking cool game, you know? So I love that about Smash as well. It's like, I mean, I'll probably try and play this Ice Climbers game and it'll be shit, but some of the games that you didn't know could be amazing.
So go on the brawl, yeah?
Yeah, we go on the brawl.
To segue on to that is just because, like, I didn't play Mart's Fire Emblem and I didn't play Roy's Fire Emblem. The first one I played was the Sacred Stones and there's no character representation for that. But I did play Ike's games and he has two, one on the GameCube, one on the Wii. So by the time Ike came around in Brawl, I was well versed in Fire Emblem and he was my character.
Nice.
Like, because I loved Path of Radiance and Radiant Dawn, I think it's called. Mm-hmm. But two great Fire Emblem games for the like consoles, and then having Ike in Smash Brothers Brawl was like, I'm picking this dude.
Who becomes one of the, as a group of us that play Smash Brothers, I'd love to kind of maybe when we're done going through all the characters to kind of touch upon the characters that we all, that are so versatile that we've all touched on, like that we all
have
to play.
That
like,
list Ike, on my phone.
Amazing. we'll get there. Probably in episode two, but we'll get there. So the interesting thing that I noticed while I was building this list of all the characters was that in each game introduced a higher number of characters in the previous game, which I think is just an outrageous thing. Now, I know you're talking some of them are Echoes or whatever it might be, but each game has more characters introduced in the previous game. And I'm like, this is crazy. Like, they can't keep this up. But they do. So in Brawl, we get Zero Suit Samus, Pit, Wario, Ike, Pokemon Trainer, Diddy Kong, Meta Knight, Lucas, King DDD, Olimar, Lucario, Rob, Toon Link, Wolf, Snake, and Sonic.
Brilliant. Like, there's so many... There's almost as many new characters as there are, like, old characters. Like,
yeah, exactly, you know?
Especially because Melee has, like, fucking 7 or 8...
Copies.
Yeah. So there's really only less than 20 characters in Melee. So it is by far the most disappointing game in terms of new characters.
Yes.
So I think it has to have a tick against it in that regard.
Whereas Brawl, and
for all those people who are like, Melee's fucking.
Well,
the best,
I think the interesting thing about Melee is that in terms of how it plays now, I think we touched on this in the first episode, is that Melee's still one that you can kind of come back to because of how quick it is.
No, Melee is still probably one of the best, and it introduced, like, with all the trophies and modes and stuff like that,
but
we are talking characters here, and Melee is the worst game for characters.
Interesting. Okay, so we go into Brawl, and one thing I kind of want to start this one with, because it ends up becoming, for us as a group, the most interesting thing about Smash, or the thing that we talk about them, or we'd have the most conversations about Smash would be, is that this introduction of third-party characters into Brawl, mm-hmm. that opens up this whole world of who can be in Smash. So
there were only two in the game. But
but even that was like enough. So we're talking Sonic and Snake introduced into this game. I think we should start off with those characters in terms of... And this is where one of the things I wanted to talk about was kind of the trailers that we get with characters as well, and how important that is in setting up this kind of culture with Smash Brothers of, like, you know, people love the game, but what we're talking about is who's going to be in it next and how are they going to be introduced. And if we're starting off with, we have to start off with Snake's introduction into Smash Brothers as
that
a character.
That was the launch trailer for the game, was his introduction. You know, that was the what you saw at E3, like, year after year, was just like Solid Snake joining the battle. Like, that was just how they introduced that Brawl exists, was that trailer. Like,
and it's so good because it's, and this is where Sakurai is kind of really perfecting his ability to mold these characters into the Smash Brothers world, because you get this perfect Metal Gear Solid Snake introduction to the game, mm-hmm. but it's with all of these Smash characters, and it just changes the
entire...
But
it has David Hayter, it has the Colonel, and they're just having a codec conversation as they would in any Metal Gear Solid game, and then it just pivots into Smash at the last second.
Yeah, like, all these Smash characters being like,
and he pops out of the box.
Colonel, how do I fight? Whatever. It's just so fucking good, like, you know, and he's, you know, his moveset again, I think he is...
His moveset is hilarious. It suits him there. It suits the wackiness of Smash that they would not give him, like, the famous machine gun or his pistol. They give him the weird, silly stuff, like the grenades and the Nikita. The stuff that makes the game wacky. Yeah. Like, they lean into the box completely. Like, you know, they make that his defining characteristic, is that he hides in the cardboard box.
Unbelievable. Perfect. And, like, his, you know, his moveset, like the Nikita missile, which was such a thing in the first Metal Gear Solid, to, like, blowing up walls or distracting guards, is this completely remote controlled rocket that you have your side B move, and it's, you know, it's so good. And then, like, the mortar is one that I never really got. I don't think that is a real representation of Snake, but it's a cool up and B move.
Yeah, it is.
But then you look at, like,
it makes sense that you have it. Yeah. Like, it's the type of thing.
The CQC stuff. Do you know what I mean? Like, the proper, like, hand-to-hand combat.
Had
Metal
Gear Solid 3 come out by then? I don't know if it had, but his moveset is tailored to very, like, close quarters.
The Snake Eater stuff attacks. That goes on. Yeah.
It's just so well put together, like, you know.
But
not only that, but, like, because this is the first time, like, Sakurai, not only did he give the character his own stage, but he gave him an ability to, because if you play any Metal Gear Solid game, if you get in a sticky situation, you can do your codec, and every one of your supporting cast will tell you, like, oh, what they think you should do.
Yeah.
In Smash Brothers, if you go onto Shadow Moses and you're fighting Mario or any character, and you hit the taunts, the codec comes on, and you have a full-on conversation with either the Colonel, with Otacon, with Mei Ling, with whomever, to, like, defeat. And they talk about that other character you're up against for about 60 seconds, talking about their games, their strengths, their weaknesses, for every single character in the game.
Unbelievable. Like, unbelievable attention to detail. And that's what I mean in terms of, it opened up this world of Smash Bros. That we hadn't really considered up to this point, to be like, wow, A, anybody can be in this game. B, anybody can be in this game in a seriously well thought out and entertaining way. And again, it's where
but
I
not
begin.
Only that, but, like, whatever your wildest dreams can think of, and you're like, oh, imagine they had this, imagine they have that. That's how Sakurai thinks.
Yeah.
You know? And he'll put in something that you did not expect, that you'll go, I can't believe how much time that would have taken. And he just threw it in as though it was nothing, like, you know.
So Snake's a great character. I think Snake's a good way to talk about how it changes the game for us, to what our expectation of Smash Bros. Is going forward, from the character perspective. Sonic, great character, great
new
representation.
Fastest character in the game.
Yeah.
Very, like, his moveset is tailored to his games.
Yeah,
classical. You know, a lot of his moves are just spinny things, you know.
One of the things that I think they really missed about Sonic was, I would have loved if there was a big Smash attack on Sonic, that you would have, it would have made the sound of you losing all your rings from a Sonic game. I think it really missed...
You think that. He should go around collecting the rings in the actual game?
No. I think.
I bet he thought of that. But yeah. It's kind of like, we can't have 100 rings on the screen.
That sound effect, you know, in a Sonic game where you get hit and you lose all the rings, sound effect, I think that if Sonic ever got hit with a real heavy Smash attack, that maybe the KO noise should have been him losing all the rings.
Maybe for Ultimate, they could have added that.
It's one of the things that I think they really missed, because for me, one of my fondest memories.
However, that noise, you never die when you're hit with that.
No, it always.
So to be KO'd wouldn't make
any
sense. But
it's such a getting hit noise from
Sonic
games.
So what points in the game would you have?
Because
you can't have him getting hit and that noise constantly happening. It's too impactful.
I think it'd be a case of, like, if you're over a certain percent, you get knocked out of the stage, it makes that noise. I mean, that'd be Sonic's, like, out of the screen. Or actually...
No, they can't. No, then they have to do that.
The percentage. If you were playing a percentage game and you got knocked down to 0%, that's when it should make the noise for Sonic. If you were doing... Rather than doing the normal Smash game where you do a HP game.
Maybe. I bet they thought of this. Because now that we're debating it, I'm like, no, you couldn't. Because that noise doesn't mean you die. It's the ba-doom noise that actually kills Sonic. Whereas the ring noise is just the first hit.
Yeah.
So you'd have to just keep doing that over and over again.
Yeah, sure.
I'm sure Sakurai's like, nah, I can't do this.
Yeah, it doesn't fit.
We have rings all over the screen.
Mess. He's a great character. From anyone else in that list, is there anybody you want to kind of touch upon? There's loads. Fuck this.
Ike was amazing. Rob is great, even though I didn't really like him at first.
I love Rob.
Lucario, the first, like... I mean, other than Pichu, I guess. No, Mewtwo isn't a starter either. But the first kind of character who's just there on pure popularity, like, you know.
And it's funny that he's there on popularity, because I fucking hate Lucario.
I don't like him in Smash. But in Pokemon, I love Lucario. Like, what a type. He looks great. This Sphinx looking fire. Yeah. Like, that's That's
never enjoyed Luke Carey. Like, I think that was one of the more disappointing. Like, I look at that lineup and say, Zero Suit Samus, that's great for all the Samus fans, no issue there. Mm-hmm. Pitt, sure, he has a whole game. Wario, of course. Yeah. Ike, he's so strong. And then you're like, Lucario, and you're like, oh, of all of the fucking, like, at this point they had what, like 400 Pokemon to choose from, and fucking Lucario gets in the game. I was like, oh, Jesus. Okay.
He looked good, and I guess he was kind of close to a, because he's kind of like the Mewtwo equivalent. Because yeah. Mewtwo wasn't in Brawl, but they put Lucario in, and a lot of his moves are similar
they
to Mewtwo's.
They kind of have, like, yes.
So yeah, he's kind of like a replacement for Mewtwo. But after that, who would be in there? I mean, Meta Knight is great, and Pit is great. Like, I feel like these characters got a lot of their own unique attacks,
yes,
you know, which did a lot for them.
I love Rob as a character for in terms of the moveset that Rob has, like the down and B where you're winding up that, because I think that when the actual toy Rob came out, which was a robot that you'd use to hold certain controllers, like he was a controller stand essentially, but I think you could use him to play a certain Nintendo game. He was one mm-hmm. of Nintendo's wacky ideas. I think he had that spinning top as part of the collection.
That makes sense.
And I love that that was brought in, because that's kind of like meta.
He's like the original
NES. Like, yeah. He's kind of meta in a way that he existed in real life as a toy almost, yeah. And they incorporated some of the bits that existed.
The original Nintendo just came packaged with him, so you bought Rob and you got the Nintendo as a secondary feature, like the main toy was Rob, you know.
Outrageous.
It's crazy to think that, right?
Diddy Kong, great addition, because when we think of Donkey Kong as a great character, Donkey Kong Country being I think the best Donkey Kong game that's out there still.
Diddy Kong was a massive part of that.
The player two essentially.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
And
he's great that he has his own. Now, Diddy Kong ends up having his own racing game, whatever else. He's a character into he has a character into his own right. But I think his moveset is great in that he is from Donkey Kong, but he's not an echo. He's not an echo of Donkey Kong in any way, shape, or form. He's a brand new character with a brand new moveset. And I'm a big fan of Diddy Kong. I'm not very good with him, but I love his moveset. I love how different he is, kind of like, and his a lot of his moves are kind of self-destructive in that if you hold B for too long to fire the peanut gun, his gun blows
It'll
up.
Explode,
his
yeah.
up and
his
B,
up B also explodes.
It explodes. Yeah,
explodes.
He's kind of like a bit of a wacky, funny, he'll just keep exploding kind of character that I was like, this is a fun one to
He was
bring
a good
in.
Addition, yeah.
Yeah. Pit was a great character. I don't play as Pit much, but, you know, we as
Kev
a group.
Loves him.
Yeah, he's there, good. And I think he deserves the thing. Wario as a character.
Wario they nailed.
Perfect.
Because WarioWare
perfect.
Had already taken off.
Yes.
And Wario isn't a Mario Party Wario. He is very much the WarioWare Wario. Even though, like, that's only minigame based, but Wario in that game was more of a biker, and he had that kind of getup. Like, his default outfit is the biker outfit and not the yellow overalls we're used to. So they really transitioned him into this kind of modern
his own dude.
Biker type fatty like character.
And it's one of those things that I, at that age, when Brawl came out and he wasn't in that classic Wario thing, upset me, because
when he rolled in on the bike, I went, what a great addition.
And now when I look back on it, you know, years afterwards, I was like, no, he's perfect because he's himself. But I wanted that traditional Wario from Mario Party 64. Do you know what I mean? That was Wario in my head. That was my headcanon of Wario. He has to wear the overalls. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, that was always one of the costumes.
Yes, you know? And that was a great, but it took me a while to kind of make my bed with the fact that this was their ideal Wario, but he's great now. His moveset's fantastic. Like, he's just does all the wacky WarioWare things.
The bike is just so good. The way you can just fly around the level like on it, but it gets destroyed, and then you have to wait a while. I hate fucking.
He
that.
Chomps on things. He farts
chomps,
on things.
Farts.
He's just
his
gross.
Breath has garlic, so it does extra damage. I'm like, it just suits him to a T.
Yeah.
And even his smash attacks, his like fist and head get bigger when he
does
them.
It's
you know?
Just he's just
kind of wacky.
Great animated. Yeah. He's a fantastic character. One other one I want to talk about. I mean, Toon Link was brought into this, but I never liked
it's
the game.
Young Link.
Yeah, and I never liked the Toon Link game. What was that called, actually, that Toon Link was in? The game that Toon Link was in. What was that actual Zelda game called? Sea of Storms? No, it's not. He's on a boat anyway.
Yeah.
But I never enjoyed the. I look back at it now and I have an appreciation for the animation style. But I never wanted to play that Zelda game. And then Toon Link was in it. And I was like, oh, I don't like that version of Link in any way, shape, or form. Pokemon Trainer, however, great addition to the game.
Yes, finally having like a Pokemon that. A trainer, so you actually like rotate the Pokemon, you know, it just made so much
and
sense,
interesting like, choices power. Because even when Pokemon Trainer, as we played as now, you get Squirtle, Ivysaur, and Charizard, so you kind of get an evolution,
yes.
But Not in the way that we kind of...
Having one of each is pretty fair.
It's pretty
and
cool.
I liked the choice they made because Ivysaur and Bulbasaur are so similar. It's like, yes. Who cares? Charizard is easily...
The fan favorite.
The fan favorite. Everyone knows Charizard. Yeah. And Ash had a Charizard.
Squirtle from the Squirtle Squad.
And Squirtle, you're just like, that's pretty cute. I mean, in that one, you could get either the tree. But since you've already gone Ivysaur and you've already gone Charizard, Squirtle's a nice one to have at as the Squirtle, like, you know, because Wartortle looks fucking shit, like, who designed him?
And I think when you look at the TV show, you know, that in terms of how they made the characters, Charizard was bigger than Charmander or Charmeleon.
Yep.
Squirtle was bigger than Wartortle or Blastoise.
Yeah. And the only one that's left as a runt is the Ivysaur, because Bulbasaur is very popular.
Yeah.
But the difference between him and Ivysaur isn't a lot.
It's so minimal. You know? Yeah, yeah. And Ivysaur, I think in terms of the, I love the kind of the voice acting for the Ivysaur Pokemon, because he's just like, Ivysaur. He's just quite comedic,
quite
in a way.
Grown up.
He's quite.
It feels like the
teenager.
Others are like kids, and he's just this adult. Yeah, you know?
and like all like a really that's what I mean about well developed characters, in that you've got like ice climbers who are quite difficult or different in terms of two characters running at the same time, and Pokemon trainer is essentially three characters with each, although each one has a minimized move set. They're
but
all very
Brawl,
different.
You could only change into a Pokemon for so long before you had to switch. You know, so it was like your Pokemon were getting tired.
Yeah,
so it was more of a realistic kind of Pokemon.
Which is
mechanic.
An interesting mechanic that they didn't keep in the game, because now fucking you just get to play as Charizard.
It's because they wanted it. So if you just liked one, you can just pick the one and not be punished for it.
Yeah.
You know, even though like, because Pokemon Trainer was, when the game first came out, Pokemon Trainer was winning all the tournaments. Ivysaur is OP as fuck, apparently. Like, I never really picked him. But he has the ability to spike people so, so easily. And people were winning massive tournaments. And then being able to switch to Squirtle or Charizard for the combos or just to survive longer made him, like, OP as fuck. Like, you know, so... It's a bit of an unfair advantage that you get 3-in-1, but I don't like the idea of penalizing you for like staying with one. You should be able, like, if you like Squirtle, you should be able to pick Squirtle.
Yeah, I actually, you know, in fairness, I do agree. I like the idea. I don't like the idea of you picking a character and having to deal with the bullshit part of the character just because.
Because to an extent you do, because Thomas, our friend Thomas, who picked Charizard all the time, used to love that Rock Smash move.
Yeah.
But that's gone now because that is now the change Pokemon.
Button.
Down in B. Yeah. So Charizard no longer has this kind of counter that he can take a hit and give a hit. And because of that, like, Thomas just never plays Charizard anymore. And a lot of people probably really like, remember that one move you get fixated on?
Yeah.
And without it, the character just loses a bit of thing.
I think
for Charizard, they should maybe have gotten rid of the flamethrower. Because it's just like Bowser's attack. It's like, we don't need that. But I guess he's a fire Pokemon. He had to have something.
I suppose to finish on it, because, you know, we'll get into, for the second episode, we'll get into the 3DS Wii U and Ultimate and kind of break it, you know, do a little bit of a summary of everything.
Okay.
But to finish it, because he's one of your favorite characters at the minute, a very tough character to beat. I think he's a cool addition to finish the episode on was Wolf.
Oh, I didn't even realize. Yeah, so the only reason I loved Wolf in Brawl is because his forward smash had so much range. He would dash forward and hit them with his claw.
Mm.
Whereas that move he doesn't have in Ultimate. Like, but I'd already made my bed because I played him so much in Brawl, and like I was so hyped to play him in this as well. That was like, oh, I can't wait to finally have Wolf again. He also had that claw attack that did this like critical damage when it hit. Mm. That also doesn't happen anymore. Do you know that little like...
Yes.
Like swipe he has with his claws. Not the Wolf Flash. No, that's amazing. That's still amazing.
And but was that in Brawl as well, the Wolf
that
Flash?
That was, but it didn't... I don't think it had the kind of explosiveness when it hits them square. But what did have the explosiveness was his forward tilt. Do you know when he just kind of swipes forward with his claws?
Yeah.
That did lethal damage if it hit them in Brawl, whereas it doesn't in this. They nerfed it quite a bit. And I was like, damn it, I used to use that all the time.
Yeah,
just get quick and easy kills. That with the forward smash made him like ridiculously good, especially when you like use forward smashes way more than you should. Like the people who play competitive, people are like, you should never ever use forward smash.
But it's so,
but
we,
like
we,
in the heat of the moment when like it's all guns blazing and you are mashing the controller really quickly, the forward smashes just come out.
Yeah,
like.
And we are as we don't play it in terms of professionals or competitive,
exactly.
so
we all use forward smash all the time.
I think that's probably a good spot to leave it. We won't touch upon the 3DS and Wii U or the Smash Bros. Ultimate character roster in this episode, because there's a huge amount there. As I said, it only kind of it only grows from here. And I think these two games, or these characters that come into these two games, definitely deserve an episode of their own. Because when we get to this episode and we talk about it, this is where the game really opens up, where everyone is just waiting. Like, you know, Smash Bros. Becomes this cultural thing where everyone's waiting to see who's next. And who's next from anything, not just Nintendo, who's next from anywhere, from any game, for any reason, what Sakurai got and the thing next. And another thing we'll touch upon as well is the roster poll that was put out that then was kept secret. I think that's a really cool thing to touch upon in the next thing, where Sakurai and Super Smash Bros. Team essentially came out and said, who would you like to see in Smash Bros.? And they never released the results of that until we get to the very end of the Smash Bros. So
we did like maybe 35 characters today. And we have to hurry. Have over 50 next week, plus all that extra stuff you just said.
Well, we'll save 15 minutes because we won't talk about Final Fantasy VII Rebirth Orchestra. You know
okay,
what I mean?
Yeah, that's clever.
But yeah, listen, there's plenty more content to listen to in the post show for this week. I'll be just breaking down a little quick 10-minute review of Astrobot and how I felt about that. And then I think over the coming week before next week's episode, myself, Chris, Andrew, and perhaps anybody else really on the team will be looking at Still Wakes the Deep. As it is spooky season, we decided that we'd play through a quick horror game, and I think Still Wakes the Deep is our choice. Kind of relatively new game. We're going to play through the whole thing, get spooked, and we'll break it down for you in one of our Games Club review episodes. Craig, thank you so much for hopping on this. I can't wait to do part two of this character episode. I mean, we could sit here and talk for another hour and go through, but I don't want us to get tired. I want us to stay pumped
and
stay excited about it. But yeah, if you're enjoy the content, check out patreon.com /giftofgaming, where there's loads more news episodes, fun episodes, battle royales, and little mini reviews, all for the cost of a coffee a month. Tell your friends about the podcast if you're enjoying it and they enjoy games and you enjoy games. And Craig, thank you so much for hopping on. I can't wait for the next one. And to our listeners, as always and forever, keep enjoying the gift that is gaming. Peace out.